AT&T connects an ode to podcast. Connect the alarm, change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze, 10 more minutes to dream. Connect the shower, lather up with the news, sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work and traffic so slow. Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories, change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
Got my Prevnar 20 shot. It's a pneumococcal pneumonia vaccine. For us wise folks, it helps protect.
I'm 19, strong.
And asthmatic, and at higher risk? Get vaccinated.
But
nothing when grandma speaks.
Grandson listens.
19 or older with chronic conditions like asthma, diabetes, or chronic heart disease, or 65 plus, you may be at higher risk for pneumococcal pneumonia. Prevnar 20 can help protect you with just one dose.
Prevnar 20 is approved for adults to help prevent infections from 20 strains of the bacteria that cause pneumococcal pneumonia. Continued approval may depend on a supportive study. Don't give Prevnar 20 if you've had a severe allergic reaction to the vaccine or its ingredients. Adults with weakened immune systems may have a lower response to the vaccine. Side effects include pain and swelling at the injection site, fatigue, headache, muscle, and joint pain. For full prescribing information, please call 1-855-213-2138 or visit Prevnar 20.com.
Ask your doctor or pharmacist about getting vaccinated with Prevnar 20, even if you've already received another pneumococcal pneumonia vaccine.
Welcome to 500 Greatest Songs, a podcast based on Rolling Stone's hugely popular, influential, and sometimes controversial list. I'm Brittany Spanos.
And I'm Rob Sheffield. We're here to shed light on the greatest songs ever made and discover what makes them so great.
From classics like Fleetwood Mac's Dreams to the Ronettes' Be My Baby, and modern day classics like The Killers' Mr. Brightside.
Listen to Rolling Stone's 500 Greatest Songs on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to another episode of Gangster Chronicles. This is episode number 4, and you're listening to Alex Alonso, and I'm sitting here with...
It's Reggie Wright.
And James McDonald.
And we're going to talk about a few things on this episode, but first, quite a few people wanted to hear a couple of Death Row history questions. So let's start off with the Death Row history questions. What do you guys got to share about that?
Oh, okay. Well, shit. You asked us a couple of good questions, Alonzo, at the beginning, so we'll let you just ask us the questions. And
all right. Well, Can-Am recording sessions. Who really got beat up at that studio?
Who didn't?
You had all type of situations that was going on there. Most of it is over-exaggerated or blown up. But, artists got dealt with, and... Not the artists we know, not Snoop or Pac or Dre or people like that. There's people that was trying to get on, that was trying to do stuff that wasn't taking the business seriously. Some instances like that. It was mainly homies on homie stuff, to be honest. I don't know if in situations like, the mob against the Long Beach Crips that was mainly associated with us or anything like that. I don't have any situations like that. We all know the Warren G getting his chain snatched and then, Big C Style and Trey D came and tried to talk Suge to make sure he's getting the chain back and stuff like that.
And Trey D was able to get that chain back.
Yeah, that's Trey D version. It's Trey D version. Everybody got a version.
Yeah.
I keep telling people it wasn't like people saying, I saw him on Vlad and said he would have did this or did that. People have respect for each other and it didn't go down like that. Why Warren G got his chain taken, I don't know. But Suge, talked to whoever took the chain from him, and they gave Warren G bitch ass back his chain.
James, were you at any of those Can-Am studio sessions?
No, I didn't hang out with them like that at that. I was tired of the fighting.
What year are we talking about during these Can-Am studio sessions?
Well, this particular incident was like 94.
Ooh, early.
93.
Before Pac got there.
Oh, yeah. This is before Pac got there. Pac got there, for those of y'all don't know, November or October of 95.
You really can't name now a place that Death Row was at that nobody got their ass whooped in. Everywhere we went, somebody got whooped on. For no reason at all. Some of them.
It's a crazy way to run a corporation, though.
Oh, man. Huh.
A multi-million-dollar corporation, hundreds of millions of dollars coming in.
Okay, but that's easy to say or hard to say because How many of the corporations have guys fresh out of, on the streets from the penitentiaries working for them?
Yeah.
Hey, I was loving it. The Rams was my favorite incident when we beat the Rams up. They was mad at Suge, stretched Suge car. Suge came, got us. We was at the Roxbury. And Suge came out. I mean, we was drinking like it was the thing to do. And it was no questions asked. We didn't find out till after what the situation was. But once it was over, man, we worked them. And these were some big boys. And that man, Defro had his days on making sure they was known.
All right, let's move on to another question here. Someone wanted to know, was DJ Quick, I mean, I know the answer to this, but was DJ Quick ever signed to Death Row? Why is that even a question? Is there a confusion about
it? Well, DJ Quick was instrumental of being up at Can-Am Studio. But what we all know, DJ Quick was signed to Profile Records, which was the label that Ron DMC and all of them was signed to back in New York. Most people think Ron DMC and them was signed to what? Def Jam. Not the fact they were signed to Profile. But DJ Quick was signed to Suge as a producer, but not as an artist. And Suge was also managing him with his contract with Profile Records, or getting some business handled, like he did for Mary J. Blige.
Wasn't he managing DJ Quick before even Death Row blew up?
No.
Okay. That came after.
That came later.
Okay.
Yeah, that came later. You had people that was with DJ Quick, you know, Tony Lane. Shout out Tony Lane. I hope you're feeling better. People like that was dealing with was Quick or was trying to help him out with a situation. But now Suge and Quick relationship didn't start up until after Death Row was doing this thing.
So technically he was signed to Death Row, but as a producer only.
A producer only, and Suge was managing him and trying to get his paperwork and getting this stuff situation right with Profile, just like we know of him doing with Jodeci and Mary J.
So if Quick wasn't he was contractually obligated to Profile.
Profile Records.
He probably would have put something out on Death Row if he didn't have that contract.
Oh, he did a couple of songs for him. Matter of fact, I reached back to Quick while Suge was in jail and on Death Row Uncut because he always wanted to do a video for Black Pussy.
Oh, man.
And I was like, okay, Quick, you know what? We got some money. We over here at Peanuts right now doing something. Come on over here. We're going to shoot this little video to the song Black Pussy. And we just did that for him, you know, and shot that video. So y'all check out Black Pussy. It was never released commercially or anything like that, but, you know, it's out there on the internet.
Yeah, it was a hot song back on his 1991 album, I think.
Yeah.
James, did you cross paths with DJ Quick during these years?
Oh, man, I've been knowing that little cat from their neighborhood. Me and the homeboys used to hang over there.
They're going to get you. They're going to say
he's from Treetop.
I see. But he was doing his thing. Everybody don't know. We look at Foodtown, Treetop the same. Just like right Bob now,
I know where
they're
from.
They're beefing right now. Yeah.
No, they actually called a truce.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Treetop, Foodtown, the West Side, Paul Rouge, they all called a truce right now. A ceasefire. But, yeah, I knew him when he was mixing his tape. Man, my homeboy.
Let me ask you this. Let me cut you off. Was the ceasefire done after the Nipsey thing, or just done before that?
No, this was just recently done.
See, everybody taking following suit. That's the one thing that's happening from the West Side with the guys from '60s and A Trade and all they're doing. I noticed a lot of gangs are starting to try to do the truth thing in their neighborhood.
But I had heard about discussions between the Fruit Towns and the Treetops. But get back to what you were saying, James.
Yeah, go ahead, James.
What was I? I've been knowing him since he was just doing his little mixtapes and all that. We was doing our thing. He was doing his thing. But, yeah, I've been knowing him for a minute.
Cool.
Long time.
All right, so another person wanted to know, was Tupac broke before he died? I mean, it's funny, but it's not funny.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. That's the misconception. Well, number one, when he was in jail, he was broke. That's why we reached out to him, or that's why he had his girl, his wife at the time, reach out to Suge. I was with Suge when she reached out and called and just was like, hey, I need some money. And Suge shot 15, had me make arrangements to get $15,000 put on his books. He was, you know, had financial situation then, so how the conversation went was Tupac's wife reached out. I can't think of her name. Keisha, I think. Reached out to Suge and was like, hey, Pac needs some money put on his books. He want to, you know, see what you can do because Interscope not looking out for him right now. They saying that he's unrecouped. And so Suge immediately shot $15,000 and put on his books. Didn't think anything of it. You know, he had already tried to solicit Pac as far as being on death row and all of that. And Pac told him, nah, I ain't ready for y'all. Y'all too wild over there. And so Pac then reached out to Suge, made a phone call and got on the phone and said, hey, Suge, can you come and see me? I need you to come up here and see me. Because people don't know, Pac was having it hard in prison. I mean, I know we all have it hard, but he was having it especially hard. There was rumors of things that happened to him out there that y'all done heard.
I've heard a few rumors, but I never believed
them. Like beating him up or something?
All right. But anyway.
Anyway, man, I want to know.
You ain't getting me speaking on that.
Oh, he was getting poked in his booty.
So anyway.
Go ahead.
So we reached out to him and went up there and visit Pac while he was in jail. And Suge went in. And at that time, he came back. I just remember him coming back, you know, to the limo and saying, man, Pac is, you know, he ain't doing well, but we're going to try to get him on death row. He want to be down and go try to get some of his money from Interscope, and he want me to look out. And so we went up there and made about two or three trips up there. Eventually, David Kenner, the company attorney and was handling most of the business affairs, went up there with us, and they came up with a way to get him out of prison. And they got him out. And got him signed. All that he pretty much asked for was for Suge to help get his mama in a house and to get him out. And that's what Suge did. Got his mama situated with a house out in Atlanta. And we eventually got him out of jail on a bond. You know, people be like, oh, Death Row didn't put up any money or anything like that. Okay. Yeah, Suge only put up $750 of the million and a half. But the other $750 Interscope put up, but they billed it back to Death Row. So, you know, this is like a loan. You know, if you get advance on something and you have to pay it back.
But that was guaranteed money they were getting back because they were getting the baddest rapper on earth.
They had an album, Me Against the World, that just sold 2 million records while he was in prison.
But that wasn't a Death Row record, though.
That was Interscope.
Yeah.
That's my point. They already had him. They just was tired of. When you make so much money and millions of dollars, you'd be like, do I have to deal with this? Why do I have to keep dealing with this? That's how white folks think. You know, like, is this $1 million going to change my life anymore? No. And so
that's they didn't want him no more?
They left him in jail. They didn't try to get him out on an appeal bond.
I mean, he was going through so many controversial things that it was probably more of a liability of keeping this artist.
Especially when they trying to get a deal with Time Warner, who was trying to get a cable deal. They had now corporate or big major companies behind them. They wasn't just a private company anymore. You know, that was for Time Warner and the Dolores Tucker and the Bob Dole situation. Y'all go research that. Y'all see what all of that was behind. So that was the restraints that Interscope had at the time. So anyway.
So basically, was he broke or not?
Okay, but the question was when he died. So I'm saying, so he was broke then, not doing well. So he came to death row, did all of this stuff. His first album, commercial release, was released on death row. February the 13th. 1996. All Eyes on Me.
Man, amazing album.
Anybody?
That was a double CD.
Double CD. We did all those videos, which get bills back to the artist. He had cars. He was living on Wilshire in a penthouse. First, before that, he was living in a Peninsula Hotel. Had two rooms for his homeboy, Big Syke, and Bo. And then one of my security guards. And then he was staying in the penthouse. So you got all of that money that's been spent today. My point is he has spent a lot of money. He had all of this unlimited studio time. We know, we see how much records was there. All of that gets billed back to the artists and the videos and all of that. And then this is what most people don't know, is it takes 180 days before a record company is supposed to give you accounting or give you, you know, you know, your what you made.
Like an expense report.
Yeah, your expense report.
Basically,
and all that.
What you owe them.
That's what it usually is. But he did so well, he was in the positive, but there was money being spent. So people were like, well, Well, that's why he was killed. That's why they had you killed, because y'all knew all this money that y'all was going to owe him. No, it wasn't that much money that was going to be owed to him. But he wasn't due accounting yet, is my question. So he had money, but it's funny to me why people always say, why Death Row cheated him, or why Death Row didn't give him all the money, when we forgot he did two movies. Where is that money? Suge had no control over his movie monies. He had a publishing deal. He didn't have a publishing deal with Marion Suge Knight or Suge Knight Publishing or Death Row. So where is that money? So people just don't realize, you know, the money wasn't due yet when he died, when he got killed.
Okay, I understand it.
So where did the money go? If he got killed and it was owed to him, where did it go?
Wouldn't there be a Tupac Shakur estate that gets the money?
That's who got it.
His estate?
Yeah, the estate got it. By the time she went and got a lawyer, you know, she had to get the business right. I understand why.
And that would be a Fannie Shakur, the mother.
The mother who had money to buy out the daddy. Because, you know, that's what people don't understand. She did a great, smart business move by Dumb on his part, in my mind. But she paid out his natural daddy $722,000 to get him out of the way, where she became the
because
only.
Because he was coming.
He was coming. He's just as much right as she does.
Yeah.
And you know, when you don't have a will or a trust or a estate, that's why people, black folks, we got to get the trust,
so
the living trust done, so you can have stuff done the way you want it done when you die, because we never know when we're going to die. Go ahead, Jay.
So technically, he didn't have no money, but when he died, he had an estate.
He had $100,000 in his account.
That's
everything was
rich.
Being paid for, but he had money coming. Like,
yeah.
I said, if we do the math on the dates from when his album was released to the time he died, it wasn't within that 180 days yet, which is 6 months.
And plus, he had money coming in probably when he passed. He was probably at the peak of his money-earning ability at that time. 1996 was probably the most he made out of any previous year.
And, you know, when people say, well, where was the money from Me Against the World and all that? Well, he was unrecouped, because we forget. He had all the legal fees and things that was going on in his life that caused him to be in that situation. And most people don't know, you don't make as much money as we think off of albums. Where you generally make your money at is from your publishing deals and from your shows.
Yeah, you're basically touring. Making like a dollar per CD you sell.
If you're lucky.
Yeah. All right, last part on this Death Row history, because we'll talk a little bit about Death Row every episode, but
yeah.
Last question is, people want to know more about your background, James, in Death Row and what you was doing. Give us a little brief synopsis of what you were doing when you were there.
Well, I started before it was Death Row. It was Fern Hill Records when I started with Suge in 88. Basically just his right-hand man, just his security. I went where he went. We did the Budweiser Superfest. We worked with Thomas Klein. They had so many different jobs that, I mean, shit, I was there all the way till getting Michelet and Dre's contract. From Ruthless.
You were there when Jerry the DOC Hull. Was around too then.
Yeah.
Because he was around in 88,
89. Yeah. When he was more support with Suge and just kicking it with Suge. I remember when Suge gave him his car, the Corvette, the car that he had the accident in. And he was all messed up, but he was just basically hanging around Suge at the time. And he was doing his thing. But I did all kind of stuff with Suge until I went to jail with Separators in 92.
Was that? Okay.
In 92, I went to jail for attempted murder. And me and one of my little homeboys, and I stayed in there 9-10 months fighting the case. And came home, came back. When I came back, a lot of it was different. And then going back and forth up there, and then we opened up Let Me Ride Our Hydraulics. So I took a shot at the hydraulic shops, building cars and stuff, what have you. A lot of history with Suge.
And during 88, 89, your brother was still locked up.
He was in prison. He was doing 9 years at the time for assault on a police officer. And I always told him, when you come home, you're going to be all right. I got you. You got a spot. And we ran across each other when they summoned me from the penitentiary to the county jail, he was in the county jail already. We ran across each other, and he had came home. So we was, and I didn't see him for, 11 years since then, from that point? It was 11 years. I didn't see him 2 years prior to him going to jail. He did 7.5, almost 8 years off the 9.5. And he was gone for a minute. Then he came home, gave him a job, and...
AT&T connects an ode to podcasts. Connect the alarm. Change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze. 10 more minutes to dream.
Connect the shower. Lather up with the news. Sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work. In traffic, so slow.
Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories, change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
Welcome to 500 Greatest Songs, a podcast based on Rolling Stone's hugely popular, influential, and sometimes controversial list. I'm Brittany Spanos.
And I'm Rob Sheffield. We're here to shed light on the greatest songs ever made and discover what makes them so great.
Every week, we'll pick a new song from the list and talk about their placement on the revamped 2021 list.
We'll also have guests join us, ranging from the artists themselves to the producers, or simply other writers like ourselves who voted on them.
From classics like Fleetwood Mac's Dreams to the Ronettes' Be My Baby, and modern-day classics like The Killers' Mr. Brightside and Britney Spears' Baby One More Time.
There's so many fascinating stories that have been forgotten, like Midnight Train to Georgia starting with a phone call to Farrah Fawcett, or how the Yeah Yeah Yeahs inspired Kelly Clarkson's banger Since You've Been Gone and Beyoncé's Hold Up. Listen to Rolling Stone's 500 Greatest Songs on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Therapy for Black Girls podcast is an NAACP and Webby Award-winning podcast dedicated to all things mental health, personal development, and all of the small decisions we can make to become the best possible versions of ourselves. Here, we have the conversations that help Black women decipher how their past inform who they are today and use that information to decide who they want to be moving forward. We chat about things like how to establish routines that center self-care, what burnout looks and feels like, and defining what aspects of our lives are making us happy and what parts are holding us back. I'm your host, Dr. Joy Harden Bradford, a licensed psychologist in Atlanta, Georgia, and I can't wait for you to join the conversation every Wednesday. Listen to the Therapy for Black Girls podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Take good care, and we'll see you there.
That was it. That was it.
For those of y'all who don't know who his brother is, Buntry, Suge's right-hand man, Buntry Alton McDonald.
Yeah, he became the right-hand man. I was one that was scared to fly. And, you know, Suge was going to North Carolina, New York, and all this. I wasn't getting on the plane like that. We got on the plane one time, man. It was raining and thundering. I couldn't do it. So you go with Suge. And Buntry started going with him, and that's when him and Buntry and Suge got closer. And then that's when all the Jakes and the Herons and all the other guys came in. So it was good for a minute. It was good for a minute.
All right. So let's move on to our next topic here. Former Sheriff Lee Baca, who was convicted of police corruption a couple years ago, lost his, I would say, his final appeal, although there is a chance for one more appeal. But he's 76 years old. He's a convicted felon. I guess he was supposed to do 5 years. Maybe it's three. I'm not exactly sure. What's your take on this? 76-year-old man that claims now he has Alzheimer's disease. This never came up prior to the investigation that the FBI had against the Sheriff Department. But now he's got Alzheimer's. He's 76. He doesn't want to do his time in the feds. What say you, James?
My take on it is he ain't no different from me and nobody else that go to jail. their job is to put us in jail and give us the maximum time for the crime we committed. So I think, what's the difference? What's the difference? He committed a crime, he should pay for it.
My thing is, he only was sentenced to, what, 3, 4, 5 years? Let's say it's 3 years. If this was you or me that committed this type of corruption, we would be looking at 10, 15. I think he got a sweet deal. And in fact, many of the deputies that went to prison under him got 6 years, 7 years, 8 years. So how does the head of the whole organization that's involved in this corruption—
he should have got more time than they did, yeah, because he's the main man. He's the main man.
What I don't understand, Reggie, help me understand this. About 3 or 4 deputies were sentenced to like 6, 7, 8 years, only doing what Lee Baca told them to do, but Lee Baca gets less time than these guys.
Well, number one, Lee Baca got put in jail for mainly being in charge. That's it. His boy, Paul Tanaka, is the one that was pulling all the strings. Lee Baca allowed his undersheriff, which most sheriff does, to do all the dirty work that was being done. So let's get that on the table. His main conviction was for lying to the FBI agents, which I know a lot of brothers that then got probation. Damon Thomas on that BMF situation where he lied to the FBI agents and stuff like that. Y'all know him as DJ Assassin or with the Underdogs. He did that, and he only got probation out of that. So there's people out there that got it, probation for giving false information to FBI agents or law enforcement agents. So that was the main reason that he was convicted. And so 5 years is a little steep. The prosecution originally was only giving him, recommending a 6 months jail time. And then that's when the judge said, wait a minute, hold on, that's not enough time. And that's when he pulled the deal off the table. Because what y'all don't know about the feds, usually the state courts, they don't override what the DA and the defense attorneys come up with. But with the feds, the judge will tell you right there when you're taking a deal, hey, you taking a gamble, and the prosecution is taking a gamble. It's up to me. They do not give up their power. And that's one of the situations where we learned from, where the judge was like, hey, no, I won't give more time if you still want to plead guilty. I'm not going to agree to what the U.S. attorney or the assistant U.S. attorney is recommending.
Why is Lee Baca fighting this sentence so much? Will his pension or other things be impacted by this sentence?
No, because he retired. That's the one thing. You only lose your retirement if you get convicted of committing a felony while you're employed. Lee Baca went to try to meet with the administration, the Department of Justice in Washington, D.C. I remember that in like 2013, 2014. He got back on a plane that Monday. He all of a sudden retired. He retired the next day. And so he already knew that, hey, they about to indict my butt.
It was coming.
It was coming. And so they know they have to save their pension by retiring.
So that was a smart move.
That was a smart move on his part.
What is the if he didn't retire, does he lose this complete retirement?
He would have lost his whole retirement package if you get convicted of a crime while you're still working. Then you'll lose it if you get convicted.
Do you think that retiring before you're convicted is a loophole that should exist?
Well, how do you know? He didn't have to get indicted. That's just what he felt was coming down the chain.
Well, I'm just saying, for any officer or deputy that's charged with a felony and found guilty of it, just because you retired before the conviction came through, is that a loophole that should exist for officers to take advantage of? Because that's what it is. It's a loophole.
Well, he didn't have to get. He could have retired and didn't get indicted. That's a lot of people. I know a couple of sheriffs that was been speculated doing things or was under investigation and never got indicted. So just because you're getting investigated don't mean you're going to get indicted.
No, the point, if just say for instance, if he got indicted and they gave him 5 years, 3 years, should he lose everything just because he got convicted of a crime? So why should he get his pension?
Yeah, that's basically what I was asking.
Yeah, why should he get it?
Why shouldn't he?
Because it's different from us.
Yeah.
I mean,
how's it different from you? If you lose your job at the trash company and you go and beat up on your woman.
Okay, let's go through all the rights that civilians lose when they're convicted of a crime. They lose their right to vote. They lose their right to own a gun.
Yes.
And there's several other rights that we lose. No, well,
and he lost them as well.
Yeah, but
y'all just want to take his livelihood, something that he worked 30 years, 38 years of doing. Y'all want to take that away from him and his family. Why?
Because,
I mean, if he did something civilly where they can sue him, and then you have to get paid for that, or, you know, the particular person that he got in trouble for, because those of y'all don't know the situation, they was hiding an FBI, a snitch within the jail that was working for the FBI. They was hiring him within the county system, moving him from, because in his mind, in Lee Baca in their mind, so they said their defense was that they were committing a state crime. And so they felt that him and the FBI agent committed state charges.
Well, you can't. The federal government supersedes the state.
They have federal laws and they have state laws.
Yeah.
Just like here, it's not illegal to possess marijuana or whatever.
Well, technically,
or to
it
be
is.
Married.
It is actually illegal. Not marijuana in the state. Is illegal.
Not in the state. In the state.
Yeah.
But federally, it is.
Yes.
It is. So that was my point. Was just because you have state law, just like in Utah, it's not illegal to have more than one wife. But federal crimes, it is. So I'm saying different states have different laws.
But the way Lee Baca and Paul Tanaka tried to spin it, it was that they were going to try to investigate the feds. Like, they even threatened that female FBI agent of arresting
and
her.
And that's one of the...
And it doesn't... To me, tell me if I'm wrong.
They didn't do it. That was the other people that you was talking
someone
about.
Someone under Lee Baca, though.
They was under their command.
The way... It doesn't work that a county law enforcement department could arrest and investigate a federal law enforcement.
If you commit a state crime, you can.
But they were just investigating abuses in the county jail. That's all it was. We're
and that's why they got federally charged, you know, by the feds. They wasn't committed. They wasn't convicted of doing any state crime.
Well, if Jackie Lacey would have investigated it, how do we know that there wasn't anything that was violated on the state level? Jackie Lacey doesn't investigate any law enforcement since she's became the DA of Los Angeles County.
Was she in charge in 2013?
I'm not sure.
Yeah, I think that was under somebody else's
watch. How do we know that any state violations didn't occur, you know?
Yeah.
All I know is that people's getting their ass kicked in L.A. County Jail,
oh,
James.
I agree.
They were covering it up.
Come
and
on.
They
Wait,
gave...
You think Lee Baca, the sheriff, was covering it up, or people up under his command?
Definitely
was?
Up under his command.
Okay.
But Lee Baca got word of it. Paul Tanaka and Lee Baca got word of it, and they said, hide that inmate. The one you called the snitch.
Well,
I don't call them snitches when they work for the police. When when they're investigating the cops.
Well,
when it's
okay, whatever. But that's what he was. He was a federal informant for the FBI, trying to work off a case for federally, not even for his state charge that he was in custody for.
Now, James, I know you've heard of many stories of people getting their ass beat in the county jail.
I've been in the county jail. I was in the gang module.
Let me just say this: deputies and people that does that needs to be violated or you know, need to go to jail.
These are a lot of things that they do and they can do in the county jail. Take your food, wet you up with the water hose, and leave you laying there butt naked.
And all of those things are wrong.
Like
our last discussion.
So, yes, I've been treated like that many a times in the county jail from soon as I walk in there. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? They busting you upside your head. If you take your shoulder off the wall, you getting smacked. Next thing you know, you got 10, 15 deputies on you. I've been in the gang module where one of the homies was on the phone, and they took the phone. He was talking to his moms, called her a bitch, and hang up this phone from this bitch. And now there's a gang war. And the dogs biting you, getting shot with them rubber bullets. I've been in that. So they take it totally overboard. Man, it's a cold thing to sleep on some steel in a puddle of water, wet, and they just close that gate and leave you there.
And stuff like that needs to be investigated and dealt with.
Okay, but if I say something or report what they did, it goes unrecognized.
Exactly. So would you call one of your homeboys in the gang module that's giving the feds information on us getting our asses kicked a snitch?
No, it's knowledge that if we don't say nothing, then who will? And why would he got to be a snitch if he telling if he telling how they treating us in
you
here?
You tell on the police.
No, he's telling how the police is beating us in here. That makes him. I don't know what the case is about. Yeah. So he asked a question. So is he a snitch because he telling?
Well, he was in there.
The FBI
had a, he had a phone. He had a phone.
And the FBI gave him a phone.
The FBI gave him a phone, and he was in there. But I'm not saying he was a snitch for that. I said he was a snitch because he was working with the FBI
on this case.
He's been informing one. They didn't just recruit him. He's always been.
So you basically saying the FBI sent him in the county.
He's always been in there. And it ain't like he just went in there and picked out and said, oh, let me go get James McDonald. And James McDonald come in and work for me. He was already an informant of the FBI agent. Yeah.
Okay, and Jackie Lacey took over in 2012. So when these indictments came under, they were under her tenure. So she did absolutely nothing, and she absolutely has never really investigated cops.
It probably wasn't even brought to her. The incident probably wasn't even brought to her.
Maybe so.
Yeah.
Maybe so.
Yeah, I don't know.
So,
but they did. Trust me, they done lost. They were embarrassed. 10 cops have been indicted on the matter,
and so 18? They got deal. 18 deputies.
Total?
Yeah.
Well, I know of 10.
18 deputies have been indicted, and everyone's been to prison except Lee Baca. And Lee Baca is
fighting
this.
Well, he's going, and he, trust me, he done spent tons of money, and trust me, he's going, even the prosecution to now is still only recommending that he does 2 years on the 3 year sentence that Judge Anderson.
Let me say this. Ain't it scary, though? Just think, out of them 18, how many, if just say 7 of them would have made it to the streets in a car? This is what we'd have had to deal with.
Oh no, they were past cars. These were people who had been in cars, and these were sergeants. And
oh, was it?
Oh yeah, they were high.
Yeah, they know better.
I think they were all different ages.
They were.
There were some young ones. There were some older ones.
But I'm just saying, when they come from the county jail,
they was under Paul Tanaka's ring, which, like you say, you know,
oh, so they all got stripes.
Yeah, they were high up. You know, they were following their sergeant's direction, as Eazy-E said in the song.
So what do you think about a 76-year-old man, Lee Baca, going to prison?
Bill Cosby in jail.
True.
Yeah.
I'm serious. If you could lock Bill Cosby up at 80-some years old, that white man ain't no different.
Yeah.
We all, if I kill you and I'm 90, you going to jail.
Okay.
I'm going to jail.
So now we compare a person that lied to the FBI
to
an alleged rapist.
We all said
all right.
The age difference. Just because he's...
Well, so we just talking about the age.
So then. You think this man shouldn't go to jail?
No.
You don't think he should?
Serious?
Yeah.
Okay.
A little bit of time. 1 year in the feds.
He's going to do 2 years.
Yeah, but you don't even want him doing 2 years.
I can care less. I don't know him. But
I'm saying the principality of it.
From knowing how our system works, from probation to all of this, and I know y'all will say, well, he should have known better because he was a cop. He should even know.
True.
Okay. But this man is going to jail for giving false information to some FBI agents who claimed to have dementia when he was talking to the FBI agents.
Well, I don't believe any of that's true.
But that's his claim. That's his defense.
Well, this is what made the feds so upset. When they would go try to visit the quote-unquote snitch, I think his name was Anthony Brown, they're literally telling federal agents, oh, he's not here. Oh, we can't find him. Oh, he's in transport right now. Oh, he's in court. I mean, everything was a lie.
Yeah.
They were deliberately preventing the feds.
But was Lee Baca doing that?
Well, it has to come down from Paul Tanaka and Lee Baca. In fact, there was one woman that was told she didn't get indicted.
What they went to jail for. This is why it became a big thing, and it pissed off the U.S. attorney and the judges and all of that, was because the two sergeants that worked for Paul Tanaka went to the FBI agent's house and threatened to arrest her for sneaking a phone into their jail facility.
Which you can't do that.
What? Without a warrant?
You can't. She could have went to jail.
She was wrong for that. But they shouldn't have went. They should have called her superiors and said, "Hey, we need to talk. Let's all meet."
Wait, what's
but
the crime?
They went to the house.
What's the crime for the federal agent that's investigating potential crimes that the L.A. sheriff's deputies are committing of giving a phone to an inmate?
Those called warrants. That's what you get, warrants. You get that approved by a judge.
Well, then why did all these people end up going to jail then? These cases should be dismissed then.
Yeah. Well, that's the argument. That's what most of them defense was.
None of this case, zero of the sheriff's deputies' cases were dismissed. They all were found guilty. Some got lesser sentences for cooperating.
Correct.
But I'm surprised that many of them got more time than Lee Baca and Paul Tanaka did, even though they're doing what
they
were told to do.
Well, they went to houses and made threats and did some other things. They were mainly the ones doing it. And like you said, falling there or trying to impress their superior, because I'm one that don't believe the superiors tell you everything, mm-hmm. you know, what to do. All right, you do this, you do this. They just say, get it done. And they elected to do those things to get it done that way.
Well, the last thing I want to say on this is there was a clerk that was working with the sheriff, mm-hmm. and a deputy told her to change the location of where Mr. Brown is at on the computer.
Exactly.
And she said, no, I'm not going to do that. Okay. And he said, no, you have to do it. He said, why? She said, give me a letter, and then I'll do it. And he didn't have the letter, so she never did it.
Exactly.
And I wish I knew her name. I want to commend her because she had some integrity. And she would not be intimidated by a deputy telling her to change something in the computer, where most of the time I think that all these people are going to fall in line with whatever cops tell you to do.
And that's my point. Well, no, that ain't true. That isn't true. And that's my point, where you have some that are dirty or wrong, but not the whole system.
But the way she told the story was this deputy was trying to intimidate her. And,
oh, of course
and
it was.
She said, well, give me the letter from Lee Baca or Paul Tanaka that says to do this, and I'll do it.
Yeah.
But unless you show me some documentation, I'm not doing it.
And if Lee Baca was involved in it the way we wanted to be portrayed, he would have just said, hold on, and got Lee Baca on the phone and called Lee Baca and say, hey, Lee Baca, tell this
Lee
this,
Baca
this clerk
was just smart.
To do what I just told her to do. But did Lee Baca do that?
I wouldn't put my name on no paperwork.
All right, let's move on to...
Nobody ever thought it would have blown up like it did.
We talked a little bit about this in episode 3. Nipsey Hussle's friend that was with him when he got shot, Kerry Lathan, he survived the shooting. Unfortunately, Nipsey Hussle did not. They violated his parole for being with Nipsey Hussle. And last week he was in custody, yeah. But for whatever reason, he's free now.
Yeah, that's something, in my opinion, has to be changed, that law, because that's what... You know, our people that live in different parts of the city, they don't understand that most of the people that we grew up with or live with are felons or been in a situation. And that's something that got to change, where I understand when they trying to employ the law or have the law where it's like, well, you're out there hanging and kicking it at the park and pouring out, drinking 8-balls and 40s and all of that together, that they don't want you congregating or hanging out together, and then you possibly can get violated for parole for that. But Nipsey was supposedly somebody positive. He, you know, helping out, looking out for the man. So he shouldn't have been considered because he was a documented gang member. And that's why the system did do the right thing and let him out. But y'all missing the underlying what's going on. I know what, in my mind, from my experience in law enforcement, why they put the man in jail. The man is in jail because he wasn't cooperating. And I'm not saying he should or shouldn't, but because he wasn't given the statements that he needed to put the guy shitty or whatever his culture.
They had plenty of evidence of who the shooter was.
But you want your case even better. Especially
Mr.
when you got
Kerry
somebody
Lake.
Standing right there. Because a videotape alone is not enough to prosecute someone just because you have somebody on videotape. You need other people. And nothing better than an eyewitness that was there that can tell the story. But I understand this is a man that just did 25 years in jail. Or not in jail, in prison. And so I understand what his reluctance to talk, which most people don't understand. I understand.
I completely understand.
I understand.
Yeah, I don't
most
expect...
people don't. You know, most people listening, you know, our people, our white folks, they're like, what's going on? Why? What is the issue? That's your friend that got killed. Or,
Yeah. I think that not wanting people to tell understand. Is an American thing. It goes back to the when our mothers told us, stop tattletaling. We grow up in the United States with the notion of tattletaling is not good.
But do everyone have that G code?
And that's across all racial
I don't think
backgrounds.
Everyone has that code. Man, my neighbors will call the fucking police on me, they hear me and my wife arguing. They're going to be calling the police. I'll be scared. Would you shut up, woman? No people going to call the police?
Most police officers are what race in America?
Are they white?
Yeah, and most of them.
Most people in America is white.
Yeah, but most police officers would never tell on another police officer when they see them doing wrong.
That's not true.
Oh, you're crazy,
that's
Reggie.
That's not true.
Most officers will never tell on another cop that's doing wrong.
Blue line is over.
James, come on.
Blue line is over.
Don't get me in it. We had this discussion last week.
Blue line is over.
And come on, man. I don't know where.
Did y'all see those CHP officers tell on no LAPD cops on Rodney King?
I would say the blue line has changed, but it's definitely
not over. Did y'all
see
those CHP cops that the husband and that wife get on that stand and testify?
Yeah, I remember that.
Okay, all right. And that was in 92.
Yeah, but we still have the same belief within the culture of the police that once you tell on another officer, you're considered no good. Now, maybe that's not across the board. I'm not saying every officer or deputy thinks like that.
I really think those days are over.
Man, let me.
You have cliques that, you know, four or five, but to get a whole department behind you, those days are over. So, I see administrator and chiefs and captains and stuff. They be trying to get you. They be like, okay, he did what? Bring me some evidence of that.
Go ahead, James.
I don't know, man. I think Red is just watering this down a little too much. Just kind of listen to me. Don't be mad at me. Listen to me. I'm gonna tell you, man. There's not a police out there not too many that I know of. Well, I actually don't know none, but your pops, good cop. It ain't too many cops like your pops. I have not seen them. I look on my phone and I see that what they doing over there, but not in Compton, not in L.A. They pull you out over. They already thinking he might got a gun. I got to do this. I got to do that. They got their guns in their hands already. Reg, you paint the picture as if, man, some of these like the majority of these cops is like really like good cops. All of them not.
I never said that.
All of them are not. I mean, it's.
I never said that.
Well, the reason why I brought up about the cops is because they should understand that a guy like Kerry Lathan, who just did 25 years in prison, is not going to feel comfortable talking about who just shot him, right?
Yeah.
But see, the police,
when they do, but they don't care because they're trying to make that case.
Exactly.
They're trying to get that conviction. Make that case. Get that case. What Tupac situation? If Suge Knight would have said or Gaddafi or Edie would have said they saw Baby Lane in that car in Vegas, which they did, and would have told that, that case would have been resolved. But they didn't. So it didn't. So I'm going to try to push you. And that's why cops follow around you and try to get a case on you. And try to to make you cooperate and to go ahead and give them what they want. It's a cat and dog and cat situation that's going on with that. But they trying to do their job. That's all they trying to do is their job. But they understand.
If you got Nipsey... Here, this guy just got killed.
They didn't have a videotape, and this boy got off of that. Everybody knew who did it, and that man knew who did it, and those two guys did that. How would we be feeling about them then if it wasn't on tape and camera? That young lady, she's about to go to jail.
The driver?
The driver. She's going to jail. Trust me. Only reason she's not in jail yet is because she done pretty much tell them enough to help put him in that car. But let her stop changing her tune. Let her change her tune. She will be going to jail. I think she's going to jail.
Well, they already have enough evidence to prosecute this case, obviously, without Kerry Lathan's assistant.
Yeah.
And I don't think he should have ever been arrested. He should have never been violated. Plus, I think they need to change the conditions of parole.
Yeah, you know why they got enough to get her? To get him? Just because of her putting him there. At the store.
Allegedly, of course.
Yeah. Well, we believe that
She's helping that, but she ain't told it all. She haven't told it all. She haven't told how she jumped out of from the passenger seat to the driver's seat. And how they went and kicked it and laid up in a hotel and all of that. And why you didn't try to... Anyway.
And there's a lot of witnesses that actually were doing interviews about they were there and they witnessed the whole thing and what actually happened. I mean, there's all kind of stories going on.
Everybody going to say that.
Only the three, I think, are the credible witness.
But I thought the kind of hypocritical thing here was that Nipsey Hussle was supposed to be meeting with the LAPD the following day to talk about gang intervention, but then they're going to violate Carrie for being in association with, quote-unquote, well, a gang member, Nipsey Hussle.
Yeah,
how hypocritical is that?
But they let him out. The system did right.
Yeah, but they inconvenienced him. He was in a wheelchair. He's got a bullet in his back. Yeah. He's sitting in the county jail. Who wants to be in the county jail for a week
after
or two?
25.
Yeah. Wow. But
he's already 56 years old.
Trust me, they done broke the brother down.
And I think if it wasn't for social media, public outcry, the internet, the Gangster Chronicles, who knows, he might be still sitting in there, right?
Until court.
Yeah. Until the next court date. Because I actually know a couple of people that were violated.
Yeah.
They violated their parole. And they were a victim of a shooting.
Yeah, he could actually get 90 days. They could actually gave him, the parole board could have gave him 90 days. But I think they should change that because unless you were committing
a
crime.
Well, he was a lifer, so he could have did more time
with two gangbangers, you associate like that, then they should, okay, you commit the crime with another gang member. Nipsey Hussle shouldn't be like that.
The parole system didn't care about the fact that they were two gang members being together.
Well, I know the only reason why they took him so they can get him to talk to him.
Exactly.
That's what I'm saying.
That's all it was.
Let me finish.
Okay.
That's all I'm saying. So they got to work it out a different type of way, the way they're doing it, because they know that man just got out of jail. And they didn't give a fuck if he just got out, but then to take him and put him back, what kind of police officers are these?
That's not bad police work.
That's not?
No.
I mean, technically everything they did was legal.
Yeah.
But there's something to say about...
I got your phone number. I'm going to contact you.
If you tell me to shut up, I ain't talking to you. I ain't been no witness. What else are you going to do?
Man.
I need you as a witness to make this case.
Okay,
I need you.
So by him telling them, fuck off, I just got out at 25.
You.
Now they're going to say, fuck you. I can take you to jail.
I need you to make
this
case. You
got
to see what they do. Their job is to make that case. That's their job. That's what we wanted to do, to make that case. And so whatever I need to do to make that case within the laws, I'm going to do.
Mm. And by putting pressure on Mr. Lathan to cooperate and to talk, puts him in a very dangerous situation.
Correct.
Where the police don't even care about
that's
situation.
That's the unfortunate situation, that part right there.
And how many witnesses or potential witnesses have been shot and killed because the police didn't protect them over the years?
Yeah.
You know,
all thousands.
All that.
James says thousands. I was going to say hundreds, but shoot.
No.
Oh, that's a bad situation. That's the witness protection plan, protection programs is not the greatest and all of that. And they try to put out rewards and all of that, which gives some incentives for people to do things.
And judges don't care. I was working on a case once where this woman was a witness, and they brought her to the court that she was on the stand. They asked her the questions. She says, I cannot answer these questions because it's not safe for my life.
He put her in custody.
The judge said, you have to answer these questions or I'm going to hold you in contempt. She said, look, I'm a mother. I have two kids. I cannot answer these questions. The judge says, I don't care. If you don't answer these questions, you're going to the county jail for 6 months.
Yeah.
And I sat there and I said, I cannot believe that the state is forcing
her.
Well,
she pleads the fifth because she's not a suspect.
Yeah,
but I get your point.
Yeah, she wasn't a suspect. She can't. Yeah, she can't. You can't plead the fifth. Yeah. She actually tried to do that, and they said, "Ma'am, you're not eligible to plead the fifth."
Yeah.
So she had to sit in the county jail until the case was over with.
Yeah.
Now some of these cases are short.
I've heard that happened.
The trial might be 2 months, but if this is one of those long cases, you're sitting in jail until the case is over.
Well,
for contempt,
it was at the time of testifying. The court, it was already going on. So that's why it wasn't as long as you're saying.
Dang.
It's but their job is to
make that crime.
As a cop, former police officer, do you feel any sympathy for these people?
Then she should have never talked at the beginning, and that's what people know. Because you done gave me, you done teased me, you done told me, this happened, this happened, this happened, this happened. But I ain't coming to court. No, yes, you are.
So the lesson is don't ever make any statement.
I didn't say that.
You know, no, if you don't want to get dragged through court.
I say that if you're a suspect, shut up. Be quiet. But as a witness, you got to weigh it out.
But some witnesses.
You got to weigh it out. If somebody come in here right now and they shot you.
Yeah.
And just start shooting you. Hey, street call. I can't talk.
My sons will take care of that when they grow up.
You've been watching too much of Al Pacino.
No, I'm just kidding, of course.
You've been watching The Godfather.
No, but I wouldn't want James to tell the police who just killed me if it's gonna risk his life. Because I believe whoever just killed me, he's gonna get his anyways line.
I was in the same situation with my brother, and the police coming over there and telling us, "Come on, man, we need to talk to you." What you want to talk to me for? Y'all
see,
know
your
the
thing
fuck.
Was a speculation.
No, if I know who killed my brother.
Yeah, we all know, but you wasn't an eyewitness. See, there's a difference between an eyewitness and an informant. And what you would have been was called informant because you doing secondhand information where you have to treat an eyewitness different than you would treat an informant.
Yeah, I truly wouldn't want anyone to make a statement.
They came to my
house. If it's a risk to their livelihood.
Because so you just dead.
I'm just dead. And if there's a camera, if there's someone else that wants to come forward, they'll build their case if there's some evidence.
And like I said, you have to weigh that out.
Yeah.
There's some situations where I turn up, especially my son or something like that. Hey, come on.
Let's
go. Let's get out of here, son. Let's go. But if it's somebody I know connected with and all of that, I'm sorry. I'm a snitch. Whatever. this is what happened. Deal with it.
Well, my dad would never forgive me if I did that. Rest in peace to my dad, Vincent Alonso.
That's standard.
And you know what? It's kind of the way we grew up. You grew up with a cop as a father, and I grew up with a dad who was from the streets.
Yeah.
And James grew up a certain way as well.
I grew up without one of those, so I know.
And I'm not gonna tell on every situation. Like I said, it's some situation where I'll be like, okay, it's best just to, let's get out of here. Let's leave. But there's some situations where, you know, you either got to do something about it yourself or you got to be a witness.
Well, any last remarks regarding Carrie Latham, Nipsey Hussle, before we wrap up this episode?
No, I'm good.
No. Still, rest in peace, Nipsey. The more I've been hearing about the brother and reading and listening to him talk, I understand why people was putting him up there with my boy Tupac.
You know, I actually watched a couple more of old Nipsey Hussle interviews, and I got to say, the dude was really sharp.
He was.
When he was 22, 23, 24.
Yeah.
And he actually accomplished and did everything he said within 10 years.
Yeah.
You know?
He had a goal. Yeah.
Yes.
He had
Even
a plan.
Though I did watch another interview where he was complimenting and telling where he got most of his stuff from Tupac, which, you know.
Well, I think there's no way you could be in hip-hop and not influenced by Tupac in some way, shape, or form.
Yeah.
You know, that dude pretty much laid the blueprint and the foundation, you know. And, I mean, we're still listening to his music 25 years later.
There's nothing wrong with it. Look what came out of it. Positive shit. So if I could look at Tupac and I see something in Tupac that I want to do, and this is how I'm going to grow, get your blueprint, roll with it, and look what he did.
I think Tupac's music will last longer than Nipsey Hussle's music, but Nipsey was a sharp brother, you know, in his early 20s.
I give him that. You know, I was just throwing a jab at you because you told me Nipsey had accomplished more at the age of 25 than Tupac did, and I still disagree with you on that.
No, I don't think he accomplished more at all. I actually think Pac, for just having... You know, his professional career was only like 4.5 years. He debuted in 91.
Correct.
And he's dead in 96.
Yeah.
That's a very short career.
Period.
Who has accomplished more
in that
little short period of time in hip-hop? I don't think anybody has. You know, we're talking about Nipsey Hussle. He's been doing it for 12, 13 years.
Correct.
You know, when his mixtapes came out in like 05, 06, 07. And he passed at 33. As you made that distinction, Pac died at 25. Nipsey died at 33. But Nip was sharp, no doubt about it.
He was. Even in the interview when he was 22.
Yeah.
He was speaking good knowledge and all of that. And so, like I said.
What if didn't grow up in the rolling 60s Crip neighborhood? I always think, like, if certain people didn't grow up in a certain area, what could have they been? What could have they have accomplished?
But that could have went both ways. If he didn't grow up in his neighborhood, he probably wouldn't have known the grind.
Well, I think the grind come from his the African part of it. I really do. Because how many of the friends of niggas that you grew up with was out there selling incense? Or T-shirts.
All right, fellas. I'm going to wrap it up for another episode of the Gangsta Chronicles. Thanks for listening. Alex Alonso, Reggie Wright Jr., and James McDonald signing out.
Peace out.
Peace.
This has been a Digital Soapbox Network production.
Got my Prevnar 20 shot. It's a pneumococcal pneumonia vaccine. For us wise folks, it helps protect.
I'm 19, strong.
And asthmatic, and at higher risk? Get vaccinated.
But
nothing when grandma speaks.
Grandson listens.
19 or older with chronic conditions like asthma, diabetes, or chronic heart disease, or 65 plus, you may be at higher risk for pneumococcal pneumonia. Prevnar 20 can help protect you with just one dose.
Prevnar 20 is approved for adults to help prevent infections from 20 strains of the bacteria that cause pneumococcal pneumonia. Continued approval may depend on a supportive study. Don't give Prevnar 20 if you've had a severe allergic reaction to the vaccine or its ingredients. Adults with weakened immune systems may have a lower response to the vaccine. Side effects include pain and swelling at the injection site, fatigue, headache, muscle, and joint pain. For full prescribing information, please call 1-855-213-2138 or visit Prevnar 20.com.
Ask your doctor or pharmacist about getting vaccinated with Prevnar 20, even if you've already received another pneumococcal pneumonia vaccine.
Welcome to 500 Greatest Songs, a podcast based on Rolling Stone's hugely popular, influential, and sometimes controversial list. I'm Brittany Spanos.
And I'm Rob Sheffield. We're here to shed light on the greatest songs ever made and discover what makes them so great.
From classics like Fleetwood Mac's Dreams to the Ronettes' Be My Baby, and modern day classics like The Killers' Mr. Brightside.
Listen to Rolling Stone's 500 Greatest Songs on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Tamika D. Mallory.
And it's your boy, my son, the General.
And we are your hosts of TMI. And catch us every Wednesday on the Black Effect Network, breaking down social and civil rights issues, pop culture, and politics in hopes of pushing our culture forward to make the world a better place for generations to come. Listen to TMI on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's right.